Welcome to the Dance Again podcast, Holly.
Hello.
Hi. I want to know about your life. Okay. Where are you from?
So I'm 28 years old. I will be 29.
When's your birthday?
9th of October.
Wow.
Yes. I can feel you. I saw the... this is what I feel. I live in Holon. Mm-hmm. With my parents. I came back to my parents a few months ago.
Where is Holon?
It's in the central district. It's a suburb next to Tel Aviv.
Okay. And that's where you grew up?
Yes. Born and raised. Like everything is super close to my parents' house. My grandparents from both sides. My uncle. Like we live at the same neighborhood.
Where's your family originally from?
Georgia. They arrived from Georgia, like Georgia, not from the States, from the Soviet Union. Yeah. They made Aliyah to Israel 1993, I think. Yeah, I'm the first generation who was born in Israel.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. So your parents speak Russian?
Also, yeah. It's like a secret language that they have between them. But after a while, they realized that I understand Russian too, so they stopped. They started to speak the secret conversations behind doors.
Of course. Why did your family leave Georgia?
At that time, there was a civilian war over there. My mother, well, it's a little bit complicated. They kidnapped my mother's brother. They tried to. He escaped, and then they sent him to Israel. He went to the military service, and after a while, everybody came to Israel. It was dangerous to be Jewish abroad.
Right. So they felt more safe.
Yeah.
Why did they choose Israel?
Israel, you know, everybody is always at the Jewish tradition. Israel is the place where you can find the way to feel part of something bigger, even if you're not. Like, if you're not familiar with Israel, you will see Israelis. If you're Jewish, you will feel some connection. You're feeling a connection to the place, to the people, to the agendas, to the... everything is so many nations and so many kinds of people.
Yeah.
Amazing place. Israel is an amazing place.
So they knew that about Israel and felt that they wanted to...
They understood that they have only one place that they can go to be Jewish without being afraid to be Jewish.
Right.
This is what they were educated. This is what they knew since they were young. They knew that they have Georgia as a homeland, but not as a home. And they wanted to give us more, better life, better options.
And did you grow up in like a Georgian community there?
There's a lot of Georgian people like at the area that I live. Grew up in a traditional Georgian family. So we didn't felt like Georgian community. I felt like a Georgian when I grew up.
Interesting. Okay.
They were always like people from Soviet Union. They were always pointed, and it was like, well, as a child, you know, children sometimes are not nice.
Oh, so you were kind of known as like a...
yeah, a little
Georgian.
Bit. Not really, but you know, it wasn't like Hebrew wasn't even my mother tongue. I was talking Georgian till I was six, till I went to the kindergarten. I spoke only in Georgian at home. Well, so it was like I was different.
Yeah. When did you start to like integrate into Israeli culture?
Always felt connected to the Georgian culture, like the Jewish culture. Georgian culture is like they were Jewish. They were real Jewish. Like also here in the States, when you're Jewish, you feel different Judaism. It's like you need to do a little bit more to feel part of the Jewish community. So I think that they came already from a place where they're trying to be Jewish. And the fact Israel felt the most comfortable place to be at. And I think that I'm Tzabar. I'm Israeli, you know, so I don't feel like a
Explain
Georgian.
Explain what that is.
Tzabar is people who are being born in Israel, and it's like it's more like a definition of a person really sassy, you know, spicy and an interesting person. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, you know, people will see it as rudeness.
Yeah. So you grew up Israeli?
Yeah.
Why do you think that is, that Israelis are spicy on the outside but sweet on the inside?
It's interesting question.
I have a theory.
Share with me.
But I want to hear yours first.
Wow, it's interesting. You know, I never thought about it. Maybe when you're getting like borders to you, it's easy to put borders on you. Like it happens everywhere to everybody. It depends which kind of borders you put to make sure that you feel safe.
It's funny, like when Israelis come to America, I always hear this. They don't know what to do because you go to the store, right? And everyone's so friendly. How can I help you? Like Israel is like, you get into a cab and you're already like yelling at the cab driver that he's going the wrong way. You know, like you have to be tough.
Yeah. You need to, because they feel you, they can smell that you're not from here. Like, they feel you.
But I feel that when I go to Israel and you see the spicy Israeli mentality, I feel that it comes from a place of everybody is family. And you don't behave the same way to your brother that you do to your Uber driver. But in Israel, you do.
Yeah.
It's family. You can just say whatever, do whatever. You know, everyone's taking care of each other. They're spicy. They're going to treat you like a sibling, but they truly love you.
But yeah, they will give you bumps on the head to make sure that you will do everything correctly. But
yeah,
what does it mean correctly? This is the question.
Well, everybody cares for each other, you know?
We do. This is what I feel when I see Israelis here at the States. Like, I feel, yeah, we have the same... the same energy. Like I feel when I meet Israelis, even here in the States, we have something different. We're a minority. We're a small group of people. The Israelis, the Judaism, it's not that big culture. I don't know. I like to be sassy.
Yeah.
Yes. It makes everything interesting.
Yeah. Okay. Good.
It's better.
And so, what do you do in Israel?
Well, I will say it like that. I was a surgical nurse. I am a surgical nurse yet. Unfortunately, I'm not able to work at the field right now.
How long was schooling?
For exhausting years at the Hebrew University of Jerusalem.
Did you have to do like a pre and then post?
No, or it was all one in Israel. It works differently. Like you don't have major and basic. Like
you don't have your bachelor's.
Bachelor's
and master's, and the,
no, we like have one degree. Yeah, you're going. You're in a university a 4 years. Here, everything works differently.
What made you want to be a nurse?
Like I always felt the best when I gave. Mm. I felt that when I'm treating people, I'm giving them my energy. I saw how different people act, not act, but how I work differently from other nurses, for example, in Israel. Like I was given to my patients super, super personal treatment. I was given, I try to be like a family. As you said, I wanted to be a cure in a place where everything works. Yeah, everything works about money and capitalism. And you know, I wanted to be the change. I wanted to do it differently. But it's not easy to change big places that are working already years and being by ideology that works and fits years by years. So it also was difficult to try to be the change where no one wants to change anything.
At Hebrew University, what was it like being in nursing school? What was the demographic of people? What kinds of people?
Wow, that's crazy that you're asking, because a lot of our people are part of the medical field in Israel. So I was learning with maybe we're 50-50, 50 Israelis, 50% people. I don't know how to say it correctly, that it won't be defensive, like, but Arab community. Yeah, I can say that.
Part Israelis, part Arab Israelis.
Yeah.
Were you friends with any of the Arabs?
Of course. Yeah. Like I was working with them. I was eating with them.
Do you still have connections to them? Are you still friends with them? I mean, I guess it's been a while since you've been in.
Well, at the beginning, we were friends. We were still communicating. It's not easy because they're far away from me, like geographically. But I saved connections with them. I can say that unfortunately, I lost the connection after the 7th when I realized that a lot of people that I thought that were my friends didn't even ask me what's going on with me. But I think that most of them were really embarrassed from the fact that I went through those things. So they didn't
They were embarrassed, like how, like they felt.
They felt bad to speak for each side of the political group. Like, it's not about politics. It's about the need to speak for each one of the groups, like for the Arabs or for the Israelis, of the Israeli Arabs or for the Jewish Israelis. I felt that like they were conflictual for.
They were trying to figure out how to navigate.
Yeah, probably.
A complicated situation.
So I didn't push it. And I haven't tried to understand what's the reason, but I took a break from trying to understand why. When we're working together, living together, being like, I'm going to eat, for example, when I want to go to a good restaurant to eat a good shawarma, I'm going to Jaffa. Like, I'm going.
Yeah, yeah.
We're neighbors. When you're living next to a person, like, you need to feel comfortable to go and to ask for a glass of milk. Like, this is what I feel about the neighbors that live next to me.
Did you feel, when you were university with Arabs, did you feel threatened by them? Did they feel threatened by you?
No.
You were just students.
Most of them, like, all of us were. We came for one reason. We came to treat people. We came to adore life, to be part of healing processes, and not for war, not for fighting. This is what I thought that will make the difference. I thought that this is the change. I was the change that I want to see in the world. I thought that I felt that we are able. I wanted to be the change of peace. I wanted to be the peace to the world. I thought I'm still thinking, actually. I want to believe more than thinking. The people who were part of my educational path, the people who are working at the field, are not driven by ideologies and about politics and about those things. Like, when this is why I'm not working at that time at the field, because I don't feel that I can treat people at the same way that I was treating them before. And it's a conflict, because I want to go back to the same beliefs. I want to believe in peace. I want to believe in friendship.
When you started to work, were you working with Arab Israelis as well?
Of course. More than that, I was treating people from Gaza on a weekly basis. We had the border of language. I was hugging them instead of trying to understand what they're trying to say. I was giving them my compassion, my emotions, my energy.
Yeah. Do you speak Arabic?
No, actually. But, you know, when you live in Israel, as a part of being a friend with the Arab culture, you know how to curse in Arabic, you know how to say money, and basic stuff.
How cursing is the basic stuff
everywhere.
We know the basics. We know to curse.
I know how to curse. And we're part of a beautiful culture of being together. Other people, like the evil people, are trying to shake the ground, to make it like we're not together, we're not friends, we're not, like, I always felt part of the Arab community. I always tried to be part of, you know, I was going to Jaffa to hear the muazzin. The muazzin is one big tower next to Jaffa. There is a big, how you say, like, Arabic Muslim?
Mosque?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. So I was going to stand next to the mosque just to hear the prayer. I liked it. It sounded like music to me. And for example, today it's not that easy to me to do that. So a lot of things changed of how I'm capable to be part of this togetherness.
Yeah. Did you work at a hospital, or you worked at
I worked in Ichilov. It's in the central district also. Yeah.
In Tel Aviv.
Amazing hospital.
I know about it.
Not sponsored.
Should we have an ad for Ichilov?
I'll hoard a cardboard with Ichilov.
To help your
your well-being.
So were you always into trance music?
Yes. I remember myself. Well, it took a while for me to open to this world, because it's super spiritual and super grounded.
Are you spiritual?
I am. As long as I'm growing, I'm getting more acceptance from a feedback from myself for being super spiritual. Like, I think that a lot of it I felt it more after the seven, the fact that I can feel energies and feel people and feel, but I'm super spiritual, super, I believe in faith, I believe in God, I believe in karma, everything's like, it's energies, you can deny it.
So you got into trance music?
Yes. I was in India, and it's a place for a psytrance music, events, and people.
How long were you in India for?
4.5 months without the other places I visited. I were 8 months total.
Before you started college?
Yeah. After my military service, I wanted to take a break. This is what most of us do. We're going to a trip after the army.
Why do you think that is? It's definitely embedded in the culture and everyone does it. So like it's a thing that you do. But why do you think that people feel this need to?
If we will compare it to the States, for example, the fact that you are not allowed, for example, to drink till you're 21. Like at 18, we're going to not to fight, to defend our country.
Yeah.
Like when we're 18, we're suffering from a lot of traumas and a lot of bad energies.
You're young and you're experiencing a lot of
trauma, a lot of intensity, a lot of being scared to be in your own country, really stressed country. And you need to break through your emotions, like to go and to say, listen, I'm taking a break from everything. Like I was part of a system for years. Like I went from kindergarten to school to high school and to the army. Like, or you're always part of a system. And then you have the need to break, like to be free for a while before you're coming back to be an employee, to be a student, to become someone.
So you went to India?
Yes.
And you learned about trance music?
This culture is super interesting. The fact that we are able, like, people are, for example, are asking me if I know a lot of people from Nava. But, you know, it's not about knowing them as the closest friend. The fact that you're dancing next to a person and sharing those energy, those beliefs, those kindness. Like, you won't even believe how many times I went through like difficult times while I were in a party, for example. I was super emotional and things like that. And people that I don't even know, I've never met before, came to me, offered me a glass of water, asked me if I'm fine, hugged me for no reason. They don't know me. They're not part of my group of friends, and they don't have to spend time on me. They have enough things to do. Let's say they're having fun. They're in a party, and the vibe of helping, the vibe of being, keeping the environment clean and being a good person to Mother Earth, to give back, like it's a different thing.
Yeah.
The culture is super deep. I don't think that a lot of people understand how it feels to be part of a musical culture. And I think that it was easy to fit to a place. I'm super weird. You can say special, you can say weird. I'm all over the place sometimes. I'm making a lot of noise sometimes. I'm different. And I wasn't acceptable. It wasn't acceptable in a lot of groups that I was part of. And in the nature community, in the psytrance community, I felt at home. I felt that people are accepting me without asking questions. Like, why you're so... People are sometimes calls me crazy. It's not crazy, it's happy.
What did I say right when we started the podcast?
Not being crazy.
I said don't be crazy.
Yeah, you said. It's recorded. You said
probably.
Not being crazy.
Probably, yeah.
So keep it.
I forgot exactly how I worded it, but then I translated to Hebrew, I think. Like
Meshugat. Don't be Meshugat. So you know in the psytrance community, Meshugat, crazy is good. You invited me because crazy.
Yeah, for sure. So you like felt connected to the trans community?
Full power.
Yeah.
Full power fueled inside. Like,
how old were you when you felt connected to the community? Like, how old were you?
I think when I went, I was in my first party was when I was maybe 16, but I got more connected after my military service, after I went to India. I met a lot of people from the community. Mm-hmm. So it made me, it become easier to you know to flow into the into this tribe, this family. But it was, I think India changed me, like, more than anything. It's super spiritual place, and
that combined with, I guess, the trance music scene, you were able to kind of tap into all these different aspects of yourself. Had you been to any other Nova festivals?
Actually, unfortunately, because I know, like, I always heard that Nova festivals are the best.
It was like a thing.
That was my first one.
Okay, but you knew about the Nova festivals. Yeah. Like, everyone, like, it was a thing in the trance community. Like, this was...
It was.
Yeah, okay.
But I never took part of the Nova parties, unfortunately, because for real, I always heard that a lot of people are talking about Nova festivals, about how, like, they were doing a few in a year. So it's not... A lot of productions are doing parties every week, every weekend. And they were like, every 3 months, you're doing something. It's a tribe. I knew about the Nova. I never heard how connected they are as a group, as a culture. It's deeper than just a production.
Did you have a bunch of friends who had gone to other Nova festivals?
Yeah, of course.
And that's how you got to this Nova festival?
Actually, I went to this Nova party from nowhere. Like, I wanted to go to Sinai, to Egypt. Mm-hmm. That weekend, I wanted to celebrate my birthday. And my friend called me and asked me, there is a party on Thursday. Come with me. Okay, you know what? Let's go for it. And at the middle of the party, he told me, listen, you know that we're staying for a day longer because we're going to another party. And I told him where. And so he told me at the exact, like, here.
Right. I heard there was another party right before.
Yeah, at the same place. And so I said, okay, just make sure that I will go to Bruno Mars on Saturday. Like, I had tickets.
You had tickets to Bruno Mars?
Yeah. And he escaped. But I feel him. For sure, if you're not from Israel and you don't understand how it feels to be under rockets attack, you will probably run away. Yeah. You will escape because it's really scary. I mean, missiles are coming from the sky.
But it's not uncommon in Israel.
It's not uncommon at all, but the fact that I think that in the Israeli culture and the Jewish culture, we're getting used to things really fast.
We're adaptable.
Yeah, very fast. Like, I remember, you know, you're going into a shelter or pray to God if you're outside or something and hope that everything will be fine, but you're not. I never had, like, stayed at home to escape from, like, I was brave. I knew that I will be fine. But it's, if you're thinking about it, it's super scary. I mean,
it's terrifying. So Bruno Mars escaped. And you had tickets to see him.
I really wanted to see him.
So you were going to a party on Thursday night, a party on Friday night, and then a party on Saturday night.
Don't tell my mother.
And that's why you're crazy.
No, that's why I'm super, super
fun.
I have a lot of memories from a lot of places and a lot of people I met. But yeah, crazy.
Were you planning to camp at Nova?
We were camping.
At the other party, and then...
I came with a trailer with 6 more people. More comfortable than that. You can't find more comfortable than that.
Yeah.
To be in a trailer with a, you know, you can take showers and you can go to rest in a bed, like in a real bed.
So you were
We were camping. Yeah, I was there to stay. And I wanted to stay even. I thought about me passing Bruno Mars and staying there till evening, just, you know, to feel the nature. You're already in a place with the people you like and you love. Okay, let's stay here. That was the plan. The trailer, we supposed to leave it in the area till the end of Shabbat.
Mm-hmm.
One of the owners asked us if it's possible to keep the trailer in the party area, like, don't move it. And eventually we left it over there.
Yeah.
For Shabbat.
So,
yeah.
You're there, you had a fun night.
The
Thursday night.
An amazing night. It's not even fun night. It's the craziest night that you could ever think of.
On Friday night.
Yeah.
Was it up to your expectations of what you thought Nova was going to be?
All over and higher and bigger than everything I thought that it could ever be. Most of the time when you're going to a parties, it's really niche party. So like a lot of people, when they're going, for example, dark music. People who like dark music go into this party. People who like Goa psytrance go to this party. And over there, the Nova was different because it combined a lot of different, let's say, kind of people, because there were people from the psytrance community. They were people from the techno community, like the super low paralelo. It's like a Brazilian party of a techno music, like EDM, not psytrance, I think. So it combined a lot of people who like different kind of music, and we were together and we were having fun, even when we're not into the same music, even if we're not coming from the same city, culture, nation, whatever. We're all together.
Yeah.
And it was more than I expected, for sure.
That's amazing. And so you're there, you're having a good time. And then 6/29.
I remember, I think that 6/29, you know, people are talking about the fact that the music drops off. And the only thing I remember is my mother's calling me and asking me, where are you?
At 6:29.
Yeah. 6:30, like at the area where we've been, you can't hear sirens. Like it's an open field.
Yeah.
So there are sirens only in places where there are a lot of
people.
A lot of people. So the only way to understand what's going on is to drop off the music and to ask people to evacuate. That was the only way.
And you saw the rockets in the sky.
Yeah, but only after my mother called me. Like I was, she was calling me. She asked me, what's going on? Where are you? And I told her. Then I remember when I'm holding the cell phone, the iPhone in my hand.
Were you on the dance floor?
No. I was in the camping area next to my trailer. And I feel bad for that because I wasn't like, I feel bad that I wasn't part of the last energy that this party felt. I wish I was, just to feel the people. So I was with my friend next to the trailer, and I remember that I'm holding, talking with my mother, and I see the small sparks at the sky. And it was super, even that moment was super joyful because, you know, I'm laughing with my mother. I'm lying to her that I'm in a shelter just to make sure that she will be calm because it's only rockets. I mean, all good.
It's standard in Israel.
Yeah.
It's only rockets. Well,
it's only rockets. That's crazy that I'm saying that because it's not normal.
It's not normal.
And I lied to her. And then I remember that I was laughing with her about the fact that they're not throwing bombs and missiles and rockets towards us. They're sending to you. Good luck to you, mother. You're in Tel Aviv. You're in the Central District. You're going they're throwing rockets at you, not at me. I'm fine. So I remember that I blessed her when I was talking to her. I was, be safe. Go into the shelter. Make sure that you're fine. I'm okay. But it's escalated super quickly. I think I haven't even noticed how quickly it happened. I remember when the police officer asked us to evacuate the place and to go outside. I remember everything captured. I remember the girls who were yelling that they have a tire. I don't know. They drove on something flat tire. I saw the traffic that's getting in front of me, and getting longer and longer. The only option was to start to drive and to go into this traffic. Mm-hmm. When I don't know yet that there are killing people on the main road. Like this is, I just see the traffic, and I'm thinking about the fact, okay, I'm not going to stand in a traffic for 25 minutes right now. Let them go, and I will go eventually. It will in 30 minutes, 1 hour. Like, I will stay here.
Let the traffic die down and then we'll go.
And I can see that it's not, like, it's just getting longer and longer. And now it's not only the traffic. Now you hear gunshots that are getting closer and closer to you. And it's not a single shot. It's always automatic. And as a soldier, like a former. So I went to the army.
Yeah.
So when you're getting a weapon, you the first rule that you're getting taught is the fact that the Israeli army is never using automatic weapon. Never. Like, you're not even, you're like, it's forbidden. You have the option, but you never use it. Not allowed. And when I heard that it's automatic, I was wondering. I said, okay, it's not our ammunition for sure. And I think that I understood really quickly that something is going on in the area without even getting informed about it or getting, like, no one knew what's going on. And different, like, now when I'm thinking about me on the 7th of October, I realize already that something is going on. So after a while, we decided that...
It's interesting because rockets are standard in Israel.
Super standard.
The sound of bullets and people shooting is not as standard.
No, but you understand. Well, it depends where you live. I believe that in places, I don't know. I'm not familiar with the sound of weapons flying.
So you're hearing that and you're like, something is off.
But when you live in Israel, this is also a possibility that something like that will happen. And actually, when I understood that there are terrorist attack, I also didn't felt like I'm going, like I'm doomed.
Yeah.
Because I knew that I'm part of Israel who knows how to manage those situations.
Yeah.
Okay, 10, 15, 20 terrorists, 50, 100, how many you can think of?
Yeah.
Everything will be fine.
Yeah.
I mean,
you live in a reality where rockets are normal. Maybe you hear gunshots, but ultimately you know that the army is going to protect you.
For sure.
And you feel safe knowing that the army is going to protect you.
For sure. Exactly. And eventually we were waiting. We were waiting for a while, but the help didn't arrive.
You're still by the campgrounds. Like,
I'm still in the party area. I stayed there till 3 p.m. In the party area next to, like, I found a photo that shows where I was exactly. And, you know, it was super close to the to everything. Like, I was behind the mushroom stage.
Yeah. So you were there at 3 p.m.? You were just waiting till 3 p.m.?
Yeah.
But you heard the gunshots.
I heard gunshots. I heard a lot of things. My story is crazy because not a lot of people got out of the party area because I think that it was one of the main areas where the terrorists decided to, they did atrocities in other places. It was like super atrocities, like super, super, super atrocities. It's not about killing people. It's about raping, about abusing corpse, making sure that people won't be recognizable to their families and parents. Like, to a person who is already dead, you don't need to shoot him in his face 5 times.
Yeah.
He's already dead. To brutalize, to make sure that it will be harder for us to recognize the people who are the dead people.
And that all happened in the main area.
It happened in more places, like in Be'eri.
Yeah.
There are more in the kibbutzim also, in the places where they felt comfortable, mm-hmm. they can settle, and no one is distracting the things that they are doing.
Yeah.
Like I heard women who were begging for mercy for minutes and minutes and minutes, and it always stopped with gunshots.
You heard all of this.
Yeah, and people. I started to speak about that only when I heard that people are trying to deny those things. And people are saying that sexually, and I'm not talking about only women abuse, sexually abuse. I'm talking about generally sexually abuse. Also, men suffered from sexually abuse that day. When I went out, I saw. And after, I saw photos of guys who were abused also sexually. And I heard that. I heard that, and people can't say that it didn't happen.
The whole time you're in the caravan and you're just hearing screams.
Screams. It's not, I don't know if you can call it a scream. It's a sound that comes out from your guts. It's not even from your voice strings. It's from your guts, and you're tearing the sky apart. like a mother that hears that her son lost his life, for example, like, you know, that it's coming out from your soul,
from your like deep inside of you,
super deep. And when I'm in a caravan and I'm staying quiet, and I know that even if I will get shot, I will keep quiet. And you understand, comparing to myself, to my situation, you understand that when you hear someone is screaming, the only reason is because someone, like, she's being in captive with someone. Someone took her. Someone is holding her.
If she was shot, she wouldn't be screaming. If she was brutalized, if she was still alive and being tortured, she was screaming.
Yeah.
So you knew that it wasn't that they were being shot. It was that they were being terrorized.
I heard. I knew when a gunshot, when they're hitting the ground, when they're hitting bodies, you can hear the difference. You really can hear the difference between a gunshot that hits trash can, for example, or the ground, or a person.
Were these sounds that you had ever heard before in your life?
Never. But my imagination made. It's not even imagination. Yeah, it's realization. It's realization to, it's like,
putting context to the sound. Putting the view to the sound of what you were hearing.
Exactly. And you understand really fast also when they're using grenades. And when you, like, I learned in 5 minutes how ammunition works, how ammunition sounds. You know, I become really, really strong in a minute. I got knowledge about things I've never heard of or known about in a second, just because I had to survive, just I had to be familiar with those stuff to make sure that I will be ready for everything. And my ears were super open, because I was, most of the time, I couldn't see what's going on outside. So my ears become...
Yeah, your ears become your eyes. Were you scared that they were going to come into the caravan?
Wow, you can't even believe how I was... My fears always become bigger and bigger. If it was at the beginning, it was rockets and then gunshots from terrorists who got into Israel. And then the fact that I know that I'm a girl, and not an only girl, I'm an attractive girl. Mm-hmm. Girl. I look differently. I'm dressed differently than what the Gazan people are used to. The civilians from Gaza are used to. They're used to girls who are more covered. More covered. And I, like, if you're talking about pros and cons, being a girl in this situation, it's not making things easier.
It occurred to you that, like, rape was a possibility?
Of course, because I heard it. I can hear rape from outside, but at the same time, I knew that I'm not going to be raped, because there is no way that they're catching me, and I'm not going for a suicidal mission, and I'm going to run to the other side of wherever they taking me, just to make sure that they will shoot me in the head. And I was praying to God that if they will shoot me, it will be like one shot, single shot, and I will lose my life. I was afraid to suffer from injuries. I was afraid to be raped. I was afraid to being taken in captivity, because I know that it's not only about captivity, it's about being raped. The rape idea was always like above my head. I was thinking about it all the time. And the fact that I heard those things, not even as a nurse, as a woman who can hear girls who are suffering from outside, and I can do anything to help, to be a cure, to do anything to help those girls.
Yeah.
And it took me a while to understand that those things that I went through, those things, I think it's affected me, like, aggressively on my ability to have a relationship and healthy relationship, and to have sexuality, like a normal sexuality.
Those sounds probably are very hard to leave your ears.
Yeah, it is. It took me a while to accept the fact that I heard those things. But what I'm doing here is part of my healing. The fact that I'm talking about those things, like, this is a shock therapy, but I'm talking about the things that people are afraid to talk about. The things that are not politically correct. Not, you know, no one wants to, like... I know that a lot of mothers who lost their children, that they don't want to hear that there was sexually abused girls. But I'm sharing, I'm trying to.
I think it's important. people need to hear. So you are in the caravan and you hear these horrible sounds and it's 3 p.m. and then what happens?
Well, actually it's a lot of luck. It was maybe earlier, it was 2 p.m. I think, because the army already got into the party area at 12:30, but they were fighting for their lives and to, like, you have like rings of going into the party. I was in the main party area. If there are circles of kilometers next to the party, I was in zero. Like, I was next to the party.
Yeah.
So it took a while. Also, even if they got into the party area at 12:30, it took a while.
Right, because there were so many people around.
Yeah, there were still terrorists in the area.
All around, and they still had to, they weren't even in the main.
Yeah, so you need to go circle by circle by circle and to evacuate this circle.
And you were in the center.
And I was in the center. So it took a while till they got into the party area. I have to say that the people who got into the party and rescued me eventually were people who came into the party without permission. They got, after a lot of phone calls, they...
When you're saying without permission, what you mean is that they weren't soldiers. They were
They were soldiers, but okay. I think, if you're asking me, I think that the military service didn't understand what's going on in the party area. They closed the areas after the party. Like, they made borders, new borders in the central district, but not real borders. Like, they were standing just to make sure those borders meant to prevent terrorists from go deeper.
So what do you mean by they didn't come in with permission? They just went through the border.
So they decided that there are, like, the head of the security members of the Nova and 8 more people. They didn't get permitted to go into the party because it was dangerous, not because...
they didn't know where the terrorists were.
Yeah. So, like, everything was flipped. No one knew what's going on. And I think that the main purpose was to make sure that the people from, like, the terrorists that are now in Israel won't go deeper into the country.
Yeah.
Maybe they waited for them to go, like, home to Gaza, evacuate Israeli land, and to... I really don't understand how the army worked that day, but I'm not...
I don't know anything about military, and I've never served in any army.
Really?
And I should never serve in any army.
Okay.
But what I would think is that they didn't even know the capacity, and so they didn't even know how to navigate.
Yeah.
Like, Israeli army is very meticulous, right? Like, so if they knew certain things or suspected certain things, but it sounded like they had no idea where, what was going on.
Nothing.
Also, they're getting calls from Barry, they're getting calls from Nero's, they're getting, you know, like, from all these different locations, and they don't have a strategy.
Nothing.
They're thrown off guard.
Yeah. And we felt that they didn't have strategy that day.
But you probably didn't even know that what was going on in those places.
I thought about only my micro. Like, I'm not talking about, it took me 2 days to understand what all the kibbutzim and all the places.
Everyone was piecing together.
It took me a while to understand what happened in Israel. And when I understood what everybody went through. It's super collective. Even the people who were at home that day and were watching television. I mean, people had their last conversations with their interviewer. Like, they're talking and they're asking for, listen, please send people. I hear terrorists from the other side of the door.
Yeah.
And I think that everybody in Israel is traumatized from that day. Even if you were a part of this day, and if you were in the Nova or in Re'im or in Nachal Oz, a soldier or whatever, we're all traumatized at the same way because we're family. Because each person, each child here who lost his life, my mother cries on him. She don't know him. She don't know his mother, his family, his friends, nothing. But she feels like he's her own son because we're a family.
Yeah.
And so if we're talking about my releasing from the trailer, so they got into the party area. it took a while to get permission from the heads of the
army.
Of the army.
But they were just looking for people to try to save.
Yeah.
And they came into the caravan.
No, they didn't came to the caravan. We got a message from another person who was the production, one of the producers of the party from Thursday. And he sent us, listen, this guy, I don't want to use his name because I know that his face is also blurred.
Yeah,
and,
yeah. I know.
But he's outside. Go outside. He's
outside the caravan.
Like he's next to the party area. Go outside. He's waiting for you.
Oh, so he went to save you.
But it took us 20 or 30 more minutes to go outside because I said, listen, I need someone to knock on my trailer.
And like speak Hebrew to you.
And say, you're safe. Come on.
Yeah.
Let's go. I'm taking you home.
So you guys weren't ready for...
No. He doesn't. I know that he doesn't like that I'm talking about it, the fact that he saved me, but I love you. For real. All the time when I'm meeting him.
He saved a lot of people.
A lot of people. And the fact that he's so embarrassed to admit it. Listen, when you're saving people, I can't even believe or understand what he saw that day. I mean, he was shooting towards terrorists who were holding people who were trying to... people as shields, and I don't think that we will be able to understand what he went through that day. No. And what he had to do to try to save people. And I'm talking about it all the time, about, for example, people who never went out from their houses yet and not getting healed enough. We will never be able to understand what they had to do to survive. And we were in those situations, we had to choose difficult choices. But you know, you're thinking about the worst thing that you could, like, you're losing your humanity.
You're just trying to survive.
Just to, yeah.
And you don't know what's gonna happen.
No, you don't know.
So they call. So you got in touch with this person. It took you 30 minutes to be okay
at
to
least.
Get out.
I didn't have cell phone since 9 in the morning, so I don't know. But it took us a while to feel comfortable and safe to go outside. It wasn't safe yet.
Were you in touch with their family? Your mom did?
No. Actually, my poor mother, for real, my family, I feel so bad for them. They thought for hours that I'm dead.
Yeah.
My brother got the video of Shani Lok. Rest in peace. Mm-hmm. She is super powerful girl. I feel her even when she's
not.
I know her by face. Unfortunately, I didn't, like, she was younger than me. But you know, you were dancing together at least 5 times.
Yeah. Can you explain who she was?
Shani Lok was the girl with the dreadlocks and the tall girl who her picture on the track with a bunch of terrorists surrounds her.
It's just her body.
With her dead body, with her broken knees and legs, was published and actually won a prize in some, I don't know, some crazy competition. This is not art, so I don't know how it won.
The photo that was taken of her mutilated body.
Yes.
What won an award for journalistic photography.
Yes, and the guy who took
her
the photo,
dead, mutilated body,
got loads of money as a prize for taking pictures of a 20-something years old girl with her top, ripped off a little bit from her body and her legs broken and... like, yeah. Her picas were broken. So my brother got her video in the morning and for hours.
And also in the videos, you see people like spitting on her body.
Spitting on her body.
As she's being paraded around.
Yeah. Wow, that was a crazy... I remember I saw it really close to the event and I was like, you know, I never thought about about the possibility that there's such an bad people in the world. It's like... it's someone's child.
Yeah.
It's someone's grandkid. It's someone's girlfriend. It's a person. It's a story. It's a book with chapters. It's not just a body that you can mutilate and use as a propaganda. And they thought that it's me for hours.
They thought it was you.
My brother was getting crazy. Like, I heard after that my brother lost his ability to think straight.
Yeah.
My mother stopped him from coming, like, he wanted to come and rescue me. And my mother stopped him. The sentence that my mother said was, I'm not going to lose two children at the same day.
And you weren't in communication with them, so they
didn't. No one.
When did you get back into communication with them?
My first conversation with them was maybe at 4:30, when I came to, after a while, I tried to do whatever I can to the people who were in the party area as a nurse. Yeah. It wasn't easy because I didn't have supply.
And so it was after you got out of the caravan?
After I got out of the caravan, I saw the crazy, like, for real. I don't want to get too intensive. Yeah. You don't have to hear those things. But everything I heard become, like, I saw everything.
The context.
Yeah.
What you had heard. To
like, I almost fell from beheaded head. Like, I remember that I was running from the trailer from the caravan to the tent of the security members, and I was I almost fall to the ground because someone's, like, a beheaded head.
And you're a nurse, and you've seen crazy shit.
I've seen everything that you can think of. Yeah. Like, I know how the body looks from inside. I know how, like, a burned body, when you use diathermia, it's like a cutter, electric cutter. So you have like a smell of burning skin, burning hair, and you know it has a special smell.
Yeah.
And I remember that I went out and I felt like I was shocked from how is that possible that all that crazy shit happened, all the crazy stuff happened 5 meters away from me and I'm alive. So the first conversation that I had with my mom, I didn't even like, you know, hi mom, what's up? I'm fine. No. The first sentence was, you won't even believe how many bodies I saw.
What time was this that you spoke to me?
3:30 maybe, 4.
Like after you came out of the caravan, you called your mom to be like...
No, okay. After I left the area of the party, like we evacuated ourselves eventually with two cars.
You came out of the caravan, you see everything that you had heard, you saw.
You know, it's important that people will hear. Girls who were spread legs with ripped off shirts, panties who were moved to the side. I saw a girl, it took me a while to understand that, and I spoke about that with the person who rescued me, not the head of the security members, like one of the soldiers. And I asked him, when I was the last time I was in the States, I wrote him, there's a chance that I saw a girl who was tied to a tree. And his answer was, why you're asking me? Like the answer should be no. No way. No, it's in your head. But he asked me, why you're asking? And I was like, because I know. I know I saw something and I want to just make sure that, to make sure that I'm not blurring from anxiety and things like that. To make sure that I'm still thinking clearly. And and he told me, I'm sorry that I need to say that, but yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, people are asking, so why we're not publishing those pictures, those stories? Because we have different kind of treatment to this. We act differently with dead people. We give different respect to
dignity.
Yeah, we have some other way to treat people who lost their lives. We're not capturing bodies.
There's a lot of respect in
the Judaism.
Jewish culture and being respectful to bodies.
We don't publish, we're not talking about that. But you know, even when we went out of the trailer, we still were under attack. I was like, we were laying on the ground for a few minutes and then we continued to evacuate people. Like, easy condition was to...
You were running, leaving with the soldiers, but trying to at least help and use whatever medical...
We helped first because we weren't part of the people who are meant to evacuate. First, the people who are injured. An easy injury was a person with two bullets in his knees. We tried to do whatever we can to save people, and it took us a while till we went out of the area.
At that point, there were no terrorists.
They were, of course, they were.
There were still terrorists.
There were terrorists till the 9th, the 10th of October.
So
in the fields.
So when you were going and trying to help the people or save the people, leave when you as you
we were
leaving,
under attack. We were still under attack. We were still in a bad position. We were in a place where still surrounded by terrorists and where we'd 8 soldiers. That's all. Hundreds of terrorists and 8 soldiers who are defending us.
You didn't have a gun. Like, you weren't able to grab a gun.
I will tell you the truth. I was trying to look for one at the end, but I couldn't find anything to use. And actually, if we're thinking about it, what a small rifle can help me against AK-47 and grenades and RPGs. And, like, they came with an amount of, like, crazy amount of ammunition. We weren't ready for that. No one is. Like, if I had a gun, I probably was dead, because I know that I'm this kind of person who tries to be a hero and things like that. So if I had a gun, I could go outside, try to rescue people, and lose my life easily.
So you were running through with the soldiers?
Yeah. We're running to the area of the wounded people. We evacuated the people that we could. We tried to help as much as possible. And after a while, 2 cars went out of the party area. One big car, truck, that maybe 20, 25 people were at the back of the truck. The guy who drove the car got murdered after a few hours. He went to fight with his child, he has a child who was a soldier. It was 19, I don't know, years old. And they were fighting together after a few hours, and he lost his life. But before, he rescued a lot of people. His name is Leon Bar. And the only video that I have from the party area, from the Nova, was captured by him. And I got this video. And you can see, like, I'm trying to evacuate, like, to take people to cars, injured people. And we took our car with the trailer connected to the car. And we got into a small Berlingo, small white Berlingo with broken windows. Like, they were trying to take... There's a lot of things we went through that day. Like, they tried to open the trailer a few times, and they tried to grab the car and to drive with it to Gaza. They spoke about money. They spoke, like, a lot of things that we went through that day. When we went out, we got into the car, maybe 16, 17 people. A car that fits 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, let's say. We were... like, one on another. There was a girl who was sitting next to me, and she was saying, I can't believe they put hammer in my boyfriend's head or in my friend's head. Like, they were, and they told her, run away and killed her friend in front of her eyes. Like, crazy stories. All of us together were all shocked. A lot of people, one on another. We went out from a different path, because the main path was closed because of the traffic that was there over there. So we went out from behind, from the back path of the party. And I remember that I saw at least, like, I saw amounts of bodies that I can't even explain. Like, I remember the faces. I remember the names. I looked for each one of them just to make sure that I will make them soulful.
Yeah,
to give them stories, and not to make them just shells of people.
Yeah.
So we saw a lot of bodies. We went to Patish. They told us this is one of the kibbutzim,
yeah, where people found safety.
A lot of people ran away, escaped to Patish. Rami. Yeah, we need to say it's important. Yeah. Rami is a person who. Was not connected to the army or the Nova or anything. He was a civilian who lives in Patish, I think.
How far is Patish from me?
Maybe 15 minutes, 20 by car.
Okay.
That means 4 hours by foot. Mm-hmm. When you're trying to escape terrorists. He saved more than, I think, 700 people.
He's in the exhibit.
I saw his face.
He has a video in the exhibit.
I'm getting emotional every time I see him because
he's a special person.
He really saw crazy stuff that day. He went after the seventh, after he rescued a lot of people. He went to look for people who are still alive. And he saw crazy stuff.
He kept getting calls from people, right? Like when everything was happening, and he kept getting calls.
And he went back and saved more people.
And he just kept bringing them to his.
And you know, every time you're going into the party area, every time you're going into those places, you know that it's maybe going to be the last time that you're going to be able to do that. That's going to be the last time because it's all about. Tying your shoes. It depends if you went right or left, or if you stopped for a minute to say hello to your friend. Yeah. And this is why you saved, and the car before you, the people over there were kidnapped. Like it's super, super fluid. The ability to survive that day, to go out of this area. It was. Each person is a lucky story. It's a crazy story.
Yeah.
About luck.
He's a special person.
He's father for 300 kids now.
Yeah.
And you know, he saved 700. And if you will ask him, he feels bad that he couldn't save more.
I think he says that in the video, maybe.
Really?
Like, I don't know if he said, I've heard him speak about it. And his pain is that the people he couldn't save.
But he saved so many.
Yeah.
So many. You won't even believe how many friends he saved. My friends. Yeah. Like, he saved loads of people.
So eventually went to Patish?
But they said that it's locked and we need to escape to a different place. We went to Ofakim. When we don't even know that it's already under attack of terrorists. We went to the police department. While we're in the police department, like 100 of maybe 100, 200 people. You can see from far away terrorists who are not getting, like a lot of people says, executed or getting punished for what they did. They killed hundreds of people and they're sitting in the police department next to 100 people who just saved from the worst atrocity, from the worst massacre that ever happened in Israel and in the music industry ever. And they're sitting over there, and we're sitting here. And this is also shows that the real deal in Israel, how it works.
Yeah,
they're trying to kill the terrorists are trying to kill us, and they're still sitting in a place and being. They're over there, and we're over here, and we're next to each other. They just killed hundreds of my friends. They tried to brutalize corpse of my brothers and sisters, and I'm sitting next to them. It was super hard to see because this is how we work most of the time. We're not punishing other people about the things that they are doing.
Yeah,
not in the same manner, the same way that they should get punished. And while we were in Ofakim, you know, we're over there. You feel like I always waited for the moment when I will go out of the party area. Because for me, it was equal to the story. Like, we're done. We're done with this massacre. I'm saved. I'm safe.
Yeah.
And when I went out of the party area and I didn't felt safe yet. Because there are still crazy things that going on at this area. And then I went to Ofakim and I thought, okay, I'm fine now. I'm in the police department. I need to feel super comfortable, super safe. But I'm not. It's not it never ends.
Happening.
Never ends. And sometimes this is the most hard thing about being a survivor of the Nova. We didn't got closure. The fact that the hostages are still over there and you know, you're not getting healed from every aspect.
You're still waiting.
I'm waiting for them. Yeah. I'm waiting for them because I know that I could be each one of them. That could be, I could be Eden Yerushalmi, I could be Carmel Gat, Bar Kopperstein, I could be each one of those people. They were next to me, they were outside of my trailer while they were taken. It could be a different story my story could be different. And I understand that and I feel that. And this is why I'm fighting for them, because, you know, we're not part of an army. We didn't took a side of a conflict. We didn't try to... We just came to dance. When you're going to a party, I came back to my parents. And they haven't. Not yet. It's a year already. When, like, a year that went by and I'm healing, I'm processing, I'm talking in the exhibition about what I went through.
What are you doing to heal?
And there, what I'm doing to heal. First, I'm doing music. I think the music is the most powerful thing. There are researchers that shows that. The water and electrons and different things are, like, everything in our body, water getting affected from music. Like, it's getting patterns.
So when you say music, you mean listening to music, playing music?
First, the fact that we're going to dance, that we're dancing, that we're able to be part of a tribe of music. Comforts me. And also the fact that after the 7th of October, after years, I was playing the guitar since I was a child, and also the piano, but I didn't do anything with it for years, more than 10 years. And after the Nova, like, I just got energies of writing and composing and creating art. And I got, in maybe 2 weeks, I wrote a full album about my life, about my last relationship that didn't lasted because the Nova, about people I lost that day. I wrote a song about Dror Bahat and Osher, my friend's sister, who was a military, like she was a soldier in Nachal Oz, about Ayelet Arnin, sister of Nimrod. Like, you won't even believe, this is the craziest story. I met personally Nimrod maybe a few months ago. And when I met him, after maybe 1 week, I woke up in the morning with lyrics that sounds like he wrote the song for Ayelet, for his sister, that tells his story about the day, about how it feels to lose a sister, good, close sister, without even saying goodbye. So... like, I feel like I got the words from her. Like, she gave me the lyrics. The day after, I woke up with the sound of how it's going to, like, how it's going to sound, the song, and I gave it to him as a present. Like, something in me opened. My need. I think that it's more than it's a need to. Let emotions outside with words. And this is what I do right now. I'm trying to do music, to do whatever I can to heal people with the things I write, because everybody feels the same at the end. We feel the same pain, we feel the same unaccomplishment, like the fact that we lost people who we didn't get to the end of the book before it ended. They stopped the book before the end. I don't know. It's
a journey.
Yeah.
Can you share some people who you lost at Nova? Yes. Share their names and some of stuff course. About them.
Of course. At first, Dror. Dror was one of my closest friends. Since that day, I'm walking with the D. Just for those moments that people are asking me, what is the D sign? What does it mean? And I'm like, you saw the stage over there? Pretty stage. My friend was one of the builder. Dror was one of the builders of the stage. Eventually, unfortunately, he lost his life that day under this stage. So it's super symbolic. The fact that he lost his life under his last piece of work.
Yeah.
Like... a lot of people.
What was Dror like? What was his personality?
Wow, he was the funniest, the craziest. He was like Peter Pan. It felt like he came from another, like, different world. He was a colorful person. He was wearing crazy crazy clothes. He was walking with gloves and with big necklaces, like macrame necklaces with big stone. He was different. Like we spoke about it. We're different. The people who are part of this culture, they're sometimes they feel abandoned from their society because they feel different.
Yeah.
And Dror was for real. He was, I don't know if I can say that, but he was my first trip of acid. Like he has super important part of my heart. You know, I don't think that I can explain when I'm trying to explain how he was. It feels like he's dead, and I'm not. I don't feel that I'm allowed to feel that way because I feel, and I said it today, that the people that we lost that day, they're not here physically, but we're. It feels like they're still fighting against evil, even when they're not here. And their energy is still, it's not washed from here, from this ground. I feel them. Like, I can see his face all the time in people. Like, sometimes I feel, oh my God, I see his face. And I'm like, thank you for coming and saying hello. Like, I feel you. I feel you. I know that you're here.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. I know them, but without even knowing them. Like, there is a girl whose name is Rotem. I don't know her. But she gave me her last cigarette before she escaped the party area. And I remember the conversation when I asked her, you don't need it? This is your last cigarette. And she told me, no, I'm fine. And after that, she lost her life there. I don't know her, but I feel super connected to her. Because we met and because we danced next to each other and because we... It's crazy. It's crazy that we went through that thing this day. It's super powerful. Like, people are trying to compare it to the Holocaust and it's not the same, but the survivors of the Holocaust are, you know... It changed to us. Like now we need to share the story of being... in a position when people want to kill us. And we're going strong with our hands above our head with a victory sign and like stronger, smarter, with more ambition to become one. Like, I feel sad from what's going on in Israel right
now.
But
there's another chapter in the Jewish story.
Yeah.
In the Jewish history books.
Yeah, it is.
How does it feel to be in the exhibit?
Super emotional. First, I'm not going through the exhibit.
You haven't gone in?
I've been once, maybe two or twice.
From the beginning?
Yeah. I was one time in Israel, two times here. Today, Ayala, Maya's mom,
yeah,
rest in peace, took me to the room of the faces. Like, for example, the attack room, I'm trying not to go closer to that attack room because, like, you know, I wanted to ask the organizers to put a sign at the entrance and to ask people to stand at the beginning at the entrance of the attack room and to close their eyes for 5 minutes and to think of how it feels to hear those sounds, those noises,
yeah,
for hours. This is what I heard, the attack room. This is what I heard for 8 hours.
Can you describe what's in the
attack? So at the attack room, what's a little bit different from what it was in Israel, there is the story of the attack in the party area. Like, for example, you can see also stories of captured by us, the people who were at the Nova Festival, for example, and also from the body cams, the terrorists were holding, and you can see how they're praying, lording, having fun, yelling, screaming, breaking the fences. Like, you can see. How we were trying, yeah. You can see
and murdering people.
You can see everything. You can feel from the videos. You can understand and feel how thrilled they were to do horrible things. I mean, you know, people are using sometimes the sentence. You won't even believe what a person can do when you're pushing him too hard or stressing. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. You can push me how much you want. I won't go and I won't rape anybody, and I won't shot a child or 17 years old or 20 or 50. yeah. or a grandma. I won't do that because when I was a child and I asked my parents if I'm going to the army when I will grow up, they said, no, there will be a peace till then. And you know, it's a different kind of education, different kind, like it's different.
Yeah.
And you can see they were driving into, like they were turned on to do those things. And it's super aggressive because you can hear, they were screaming to each other all the time. Like it sounded like they were fighting with each other. Like the terrorists were fighting with each other, yelling to each other from distance. And it's super intense because you also can hear the last cell, like the call of Rami Gonen before she was kidnapped, and the conversation, like you can hear people who are asking for, begging for mercy and help. And from the other side, the people who were trying to make sure that those people won't get help and won't get out of this place.
Yeah.
So it's super, super intense. For sure, you can do it more intense, but it's super, it's more than enough to bring the message up. So I'm not going through the attack room at all. When I went today to the Room of the Faces to say hello to
Memorial,
I call it the Room of the Faces because you go through a room with more than 400 pictures of beautiful, beautiful people. Not, you can see the prettiness in the eyes. Not about the sexuality. Not about the, like.
Yeah.
You can see in their eyes that they are good people, kind people.
These were people you danced with.
Yeah. People that I danced next to. Like, they were standing next to me. People, she took me and she asked me, can you point the people you knew? And only at the first wall, I pointed maybe 25 or 30 people that I know. Like, people I know from parties. People who were at my school 2 years under me, a girl who gave me her last cigarette, a guy who I met, like, and I was like, and she told me, I can't believe that you know so many people. And I told her, listen, I pointed a lot of people that I don't know, but I, for example, that I saw their bodies in the morning. For me, I know them. They are my friends, like my family. It's crazy, for real. It's crazy.
Is it hard to be here and share your story, or you feel like it's helping you for people to hear what you had gone through?
I think this is my way to bring back to the community. I got a lot of help from the Nova community, especially from the part of feeling a part of something. Like, after the event, a lot of people always asked us, wow, have you seen, like, you saw terrorists? You saw dead bodies? Oh my God, tell me more. Like, not in a bad way, but they really wanted to feel part of us. While we need people to be part of us without trying to be part of us. And that's why it was super easy to connect with the people from the Nova community, from the tribe, from that went through the same things that I went through that day. In a different way or not, it doesn't matter, but different stories. Each one of us has different story. Even the people who were with me in the trailer, like you can sit with them. They will tell you probably a different story about what we went through.
Yeah.
So everybody has their own perspective about stuff. And I was like, to tell the story and to make sure that we're spreading the news, that we're giving value for the loss of those people. It was important to me. For me, and for real, to give back to the community who helped me to be part of something, to be part of a group that never asked what happened to me that day, never asked, like they understand by my eyes. That's all. That's enough. And it's hard. So it's hard. It's super hard. I cry. I want to cry a few days already, and I can't. I think that I a little bit disconnected myself. But it's powerful. It's powerful that we're able to make people, you know, feel that it can happen everywhere, every time, to everybody, to every one of us. Like, you're saying Nova, I see Coachella, I see Burning Man, and it's super emotional.
Yeah. Tali, what does We Will Dance Again mean to you?
Wow. It's like when you're saying that the flowers will bloom again. It's like when you're saying that eventually the winter will come and there will be rain. Like comparing to like the smallest things, the fact that someone tried to take from us the ability to be happy people, to be people who are having fun, like being children, being in a magical position, and the fact that we're not giving those people the option to control of how we're going to heal ourselves, for example, with music. I think that this is the victory. This is my victory for myself in front of me. Because if you ask me on the 9th of October or on the 7th or the 8th, I would say I'm never going to dance again. Never going to a party. Like now, since today, every party will be traumatizing. Every party I will think about the fact that someone can come and to do whatever he wants and hurt. And to hurt my friends and my sisters and brothers, and we're not giving them the option, letting them. We're not giving up our agendas and our ideology of being people of nature, of music, of fun. It's super hard to go and to dance again because I'm always thinking about the people that could be here. The people that we lost. I mean, sometimes I'm thinking about, wow, for example, Karina could do so many amazing things if she survived. Or for example, Drog would have so much fun to go to Cyprus and to go for a retreat and we could do together. And you're always thinking about that. But at the same time, I understand that we're dancing because this is what we came for. This is why, from the beginning, this is why we got into this adventure. We're dancing. I don't like that. We will dance again. We're dancing. Yeah. We're dancing again. We will dance again. We danced already. This is fate. This is like Stella. Like she says, we're keeping up. We're doing that. We're still in the zone of being strong and not broken. Amazing. That we're still able to feel happy, to feel joy,
yeah,
in those moments.
Yeah. I'm so sorry for what you had gone through.
Thank you.
And I hope that you will carry with you the pieces of Dror and all your other friends who were murdered on that day. And I'm so happy that you're here.
Thank you. I'm so happy that you're here. Me too, for real. I'm happy that I got to know you.
Thank you so much for
coming. Thank you for inviting me and for having me. Appreciate it. A little tug. Oh my God. I need to shake it off. Shake it off. Shake, 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 shake.
Thank you for tuning into the Dance Again podcast. To help support the healing journey of the Nova survivors and the families of the victims, click on the link in the description.